legacy. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me, my brother Nicholas. Say hello to the people.
Hello, everybody. Today is Thursday, January 24th, and we're coming at you with episode 15. We're 15 in. We still don't have an intro. So, Red Sox it is. 2018 World Series champion Red Sox. Let's get into it. We got some more player news kind of this week. James, you want to start us off?
So the only thing like close to actual news we have that is an insane speculation is that Drew Pomeranz has signed a one-year deal with the San Francisco Giants worth $1.5 million. I can't really say I'm that sad to see this guy go. I mean, part of the rotation and a guy to have on the pitching roster, but When it comes to mind, he's not like the biggest contributor we had. Obviously, we got a lot bigger names in Chris Sale, in David Price, and other guys that I don't really mind seeing Pomeranz go. It kind of opens up some space where maybe we can bring up one of those guys from the minors, make a deal for another pitcher, you know, a couple million dollars, get someone else on the team, and just get a fresh face, because Drew Pomeranz, at least in this past year, really didn't have the best pitching year. Had a very bad record in the games that he pitched in, so don't really mind seeing him go, but that's really the closest thing we have to any actual news surrounding the Red Sox.
Yeah, and I mean, he took a significant pay cut there. I think he was making something like $8 or $9 million with the Red Sox, so they just, I mean, after the year he had, they probably just weren't willing to shell out the money, and it looks like no one was really willing to shell out the money as he settles for the $1.5 million. But we got some stuff about Mookie Betts here too.
And yeah, basically the Red Sox made a statement saying ideally they'd like to have Betts around quote unquote for life, meaning basically for the rest of his baseball career, and hoping he will reach a deal before his contract runs out in 2020. So another year left on that. Betts, when asked about it, kind of had a different approach. He just said, yeah, you know, the last time I signed a contract, it wasn't really something where I was like locked in, felt like being here forever, just kind of a one-year deal, guy sitting down doing business, that was it. He did say he liked Boston, enjoyed his teammates, enjoyed the city, and doesn't have plans in going anywhere immediately. Not quite the response I was hoping for. I was hoping for a diehard, I want to play here for the rest of my career, but I guess we'll just kind of see what it comes to in 2020 if his contract runs out before they reach a deal. And getting something like $20 million this year, which honestly he's deserving of considering the year he had this past season, obviously being the league MVP in the AL. So would be nice to have him around, but just, you know, back for a couple more years and we'll see how that all goes down when the time comes way off in 2020.
I mean, a guy that it would be really great to have him as a staple of this organization, but I mean, if people don't want to be there, so you can't really force it. So we'll just have to see when the time comes. Personally, like you, I would love to have this guy around for a long time. Incredible year this past year. But maybe now let's look at some of the just overall baseball news as some Hall of Fame inductees were announced this past week. And with the first ever unanimous selection to the Hall of Fame, Mariano Rivera actually gets in, like I said, unanimously. Other inductees include the late Roy Halladay, Edgar Martinez, and Mike Mussina. Some Red Sox players were on the ballot, Curt Schilling and Roger Clemens, who ended up being 5th and 6th, respectively, in the voting.
Yeah, and Mariano Rivera obviously getting in unanimously, Roy Halladay and Edgar Martinez up there in votes. Mike Mussina was a little bit closer. He was only like 20 votes ahead of how many they needed to secure their spot in the Hall of Fame. But Curt Schilling and Roger Clemens have been on the ballot for a couple of years, and they're slowly moving up. Whereas in the next year or two, there's a good chance we see them ending up in the Hall of Fame. Two massive contributors in their time in Boston. And two guys that would be awesome to see go to the Hall of Fame for the amazing careers that they had. But, you know, just congratulations. This is the peak of baseball, really. These are the best of the best that have ever played the game. And obviously crazy to see something like Mariano Rivera being the first player to ever be unanimously selected. We've had people up there with like 99.3% in past years. But other than that, I mean, crazy to see something like that happen. And guys who truly deserve this Hall of Fame recognition.
I mean, even though he was a Yankee player and he was terrible to, I mean, you kind of feared when he came into the game type of thing. So very deserving. Game recognized game, I guess, in that sense, even though, you know, our mortal enemies or whatever. But that's going to pretty much wrap up the Red Sox section of the podcast. I mean, nothing really going on. We're getting very close to spring training. I think we're inside a month now before they officially start. So more baseball news coming very soon. I mean, those of you who follow baseball, you know, almost religiously, it's almost back. We're almost there. A couple more weeks. That being said, let's get into the segment that has been known as Today in Sports History. Got a couple different facts for you today. On this date, January 24th, 1947, the NFL actually added the fifth official, also known as the back judge, and allowed sudden death in the playoffs. So very interesting there. Especially the official thing, as you'll find out as we get deeper into this podcast, especially in the Patriots, and we talk about, you know, championship weekend. And then another one, this one, a baseball one. I think we've mentioned Jackie Robinson before in one of these, but in this date, January 24th on 1950, Jackie Robinson actually signed the highest contract in Dodger history at $35,000. Doesn't seem like a lot, but back then, a big deal. I mean, highest in franchise history, obviously, so... Just a couple little facts for you to keep you going, and we'll continue right on to get into the Celtics.
So obviously, kicking this off the way we always do, kind of looking back at the week past. So last Friday, the 18th versus the Memphis Grizzlies, a 122-116 win over the Grizzlies. Kyrie dropping a hot 38 points in that game. Saturday, the 19th versus the Hawks, a 113-105 win highlighted by Marcus Smart being ejected for attempting to fight DeAndre Bembry. He was not suspended, but was fined $35,000 for literally charging after this dude after being pulled apart several times, which was quite entertaining to watch. Monday, the 21st versus the Heat, a win 107-99. The Celtics, despite having a good lead heading into the fourth, kind of failed to run away with the game, and Miami kept it close, but once again, we see a Celtics win. They kind of kept their lead all the way through, and Miami just didn't have what it took to come back. And, of course, yesterday night, Wednesday, the 23rd versus the Cavs, a 123-103 win. Kyrie and Horford were both out, but a lot of other guys stepped up and had big games to kind of fill that deficit left by Kyrie and Horford not being there.
Yeah, I mean, one of those guys that stepped up who we haven't really heard a lot about this year, Terry Rozier, a big game last night. I think we'll kind of use that to segue into, we kind of have some like some trade rumor-ish stuff, I guess you could say, or basically just we can talk about some ideas maybe going forward as this trade deadline is quickly approaching, you know, 2 weeks from now, February 7th. And Terry Rozier might be one of those guys that I don't know if he'll necessarily go before the trade deadline, but certainly at the end of this year, I forget if his contract's up or not, could be a guy we could be parting ways with, you know, and trying to kind of not replace, but, you know, get a good deal for type of thing.
Yeah, and he was a guy, especially in the playoffs, you think about Scary Terry really just stepping up and playing phenomenal basketball. And honestly, that probably would have been the peak of trying to trade him and getting the best deal for him, but still a really good player that can kind of fill that second guard position, you know, maybe not in your starting five, but a really good guy to come off the bench, or maybe on a team that really needs the help, he can be in that starting guard position. He's got a lot of experience. I don't know. I think a guy that, if it comes down to the Celtics making a trade, he could very well be included in some sort of package deal.
Now, looking at kind of prospects the Celtics could get in return, I mean, I think there's a lot of trade speculation surrounding one guy in particular, Bradley Beal. I mean, with the Wizards playing like they are, you know, not great this year, John Wall's out for the rest of the year. I mean, Bradley Beal, phenomenal player, kind of just stuck there on a bad team. So, you know, someone possibly we could go after. And I mean, Rozier could be one of those guys, you know, to replace a guard on the Wizards. I'm not sure I'd like this. I think the Celtics have enough talent as it is, and I think that's kind of contributing to part of their problems this year. But, you know, a guy that I think we could see move before the trade deadline, whether it's to Boston or somewhere else.
Yeah, I think kind of regardless of where he ends up, he will be one of the biggest stories of this kind of this year in the trade deadline for the NBA. Well, I'm with you on this one. I don't really think we need him on this team. I don't really think there's a ton that his talent could contribute. Obviously, an incredible player and having a very, very good year in the absence, especially of John Wall on that rather bad Wizards team. I think our issue is focusing on, you know, we have so much talent on the team already. We need to use that to win games and get in the playoffs and maybe win a championship. I really don't think Bradley Beal is a piece we need moving forward. But I guess something we can look for. He's kind of like the next thing in line to Anthony Davis, even though getting Anthony Davis is also highly improbable, and we've gone into that in a level of depth in other episodes, so we'll kind of avoid that for now. But, I mean, someone to be on the lookout for, but I highly doubt coming to Boston.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the next thing we get into here, because, I mean, still, like I said, 2 weeks out from the trade deadline, we're really going to start to get some speculation probably end of next week and entering trade deadline week, so we can focus more on that later. Now, another guy that we've mentioned, but again, haven't really talked about a lot in this podcast, Gordon Hayward. And I mean, this is, we kind of have to take a stance here now because we're halfway through the season almost. The All-Star game is approaching. And, you know, Gordon Hayward not having the best year. And I think it's about time, like, when do we stop cutting him some slack type of thing? Because after last year, I mean, that horrific injury that on the first game, you know, 5 minutes in. But, you know, he's back this year. He's played in 43 games already, only started in 16 of them. So, I mean, you know, a guy we've been seeing come off the bench. We've talked about this, you know, we kind of like him coming off the bench to have that sort of superstar power, if you will, coming off the bench is great. Shooting just under 43%, you know, only averaging 11 points per game, you know, one steal per game, 3.5 assists. So, like, at what point do we kind of have to say, like, all right, like, Hayward, you gotta step it up here?
Yeah, and I think, and I can think back just even through our earlier episodes of the podcast, us saying, he's come off this horrific injury, he needs time, we gotta give him what he deserves, and he, like, you know, we gotta give him that time to recover. And I think really looking, I'd say past all the All-Star break, I really think it's time to, in terms of us speculating, just take a stance and say, like, he's got to be playing better basketball. And there's a chance maybe he's just having an off year. And when we acquired him coming from the Jazz, that year that he came off of was probably the best of his career up to this point. He was playing incredible basketball, and that's what we think of, and that's what we want to see from him. And I'm just not sure that's what we're going to get. We've talked about him coming off the bench, and I don't mind, I think, but this is a guy we need to cement in our starting five, and he's really got to prove himself coming up here. Otherwise, I'm going to start to look a little bit less favorably upon him just in terms of what he's doing for this basketball team.
I'm going to have to agree with you there. I mean, I think the week coming out of the All-Star game and the All-Star break, I think we really need to see a different level of play from him. You know, he's almost playing like, well, he's playing exactly like what he is, kind of like a backup small forward. And we need him to be playing like the All-Star small forward that he is, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. He's capable, and we know he's capable of playing a higher level of basketball, and he's proven that. He's had a couple of 40-point games this season where he's absolutely dominated, but it's those games in between where you really don't hear much about him because he's not having those standout games like he used to. And yes, that could be in part to just the high level of talent on this team in general, how hard it is to have a standout game when you're playing alongside so many other talented NBA players. But for me, it's really getting to a point where he's got to prove himself in this starting lineup or, you know, take a backseat role because other guys are stepping up and just playing better and contributing more to the team than he is. And I'd hate to see it come to that because I know how capable he is of playing that level of basketball we want to see out of him. And I'd hate to see him not perform at that level. But really coming out of that break, we need to be the best foot forward, pushing for the playoffs. And if he isn't able to step up to that role, somebody else needs to.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of pushing for the playoffs, like I've been saying, we're almost halfway here. So just like a quick standings update. Nothing really changes, it seems like. I mean, we say this every week that everything's so close. But in reality, like, the good teams keep winning and the bad teams keep losing type of thing. Like, yeah, there's a couple games here and there that don't go the way they should or the way you would expect, I guess. But really, the standings haven't changed much. I mean, you got Milwaukee and Toronto still tied at the top of the East there. Indiana in third, although the unfortunate and, you know, terrible injury to Victor Oladipo, I think we're going to probably start to see them drop, unfortunately. You got Philadelphia in fourth place. Boston still sitting in fifth place. I mean, only five games back. So, you know, very capable of making some moves. And I think you're right. Coming out of the All-Star break, they really need to, you know, make this big push. And I think they're kind of starting that now. I think, you know, winning all the games this past week, I think they're on a five-game win streak going into their next game. But we really do, if we're going to, you know, solidify the top of this division, we do need to start seeing that push be made.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to just winning when those bigger teams are dropping a game or two, and we have to be winning on those nights and then the games that we should be winning anyways. Like, you know, these games against the Cavs and stuff that we should be winning, that we are winning, and we need to keep doing that. Celtics, as far as I know, on a 10-game win streak at home, so obviously the TD Garden being, in my opinion, one of the best places to play for a home team, one of the worst places to travel to, just like Gillette. A really hostile environment for a lot of other teams, but you've really got to ride that home court advantage, especially, you know, that's going to be a big deal come playoff time. And like we said, unfortunately, with the injury to Oladipo, that's going to be him out for the season. There's a chance we see a drop in production from the Pacers, who have really done very well this season, being at that third spot and pretty much stayed just there the entire season. And I just hope we don't look back and say the Celtics could have been higher up if it wasn't for their shaky start to the season. But so far, that's what it's come down to. I think the last month or two, they've really cemented themselves as that high-level team they're capable of being. And had they played this way the entire season, we'd see them up in, you know, the 1-2-3 spot, whereas they're sitting at 5 right now. And I think that other than a couple of stretches where we dropped easier games, I think that the Celtics are really coming into playing some of their best basketball all season.
Yeah, you mentioned the home court advantage. I mean, the Celtics being 19-5 at home and then a pretty bad 11-13 on the road. So, I mean, just to give an example, that's one of the best home records in the NBA. And I mean, a lot of teams are struggling on the road, it seems, this year. I mean, you're seeing a lot of, you know, 12-12, 11-12, 11-11 records. And I mean, you know, 13-13. So a lot of teams, you know, right around that 500 mark on the road. So I think that's going to be, you know, one of these keys going forward. But, you know, speaking of going forward, let's take a quick look at the week ahead as we move on here. So Saturday, the 26th, pretty big game against, you know, the Golden State Warriors. That one's going to be a really fun one to watch, I think. Monday, the 28th, we got a game versus the Brooklyn Nets. So, you know, another team that's sitting right there, you know, kind of middle of the pack. Actually playing, well, not middle of the pack. They're a spot below us in sixth. Playing some really good basketball as of late. And then Wednesday, the 30th, a game versus the Charlotte Hornets.
I mean, I'm really excited. I've seen a lot of promotion for this being a primetime game on Saturday versus the Warriors, you know. One of the best teams in the East going up against the best team in the West. DeMarcus Cousins just got back, so Boogie's back in that lineup. Klay Thompson recently has been playing amazing basketball. Steph Curry pretty much plays amazing basketball every single night, and it's to a point where it almost doesn't get talked about because of how good he is. So, I mean, this is what everyone said was going to be the matchup for the NBA Finals before the season even started. And, I mean, this is a great matchup, and maybe one we can look to see again. Who knows? But, and then, like you said, games against the Brooklyn Nets, who are actually having a relatively good season. And then the Charlotte Hornets, who, just like the Nets, we've had really good games against, and we've had really bad games against. And this is a point where, regardless of what happens on Saturday against the Warriors, depending on, you know, regardless of what happens in that game, we got to play our strongest basketball still and not let the guard down for the Brooklyn Nets and the Charlotte Hornets, because they've proven they can beat us a couple times this year, and these are the games we need to be winning moving forward in the season.
That being said, let's flip it to the other half of the TD Garden in the Boston Bruins. Not a lot to report this week, as they only had one game, it being, you know, the All-Star break coming up here, or I guess they are on the All-Star break. So last Saturday, the 19th, they dropped a game to the New York Rangers 3-2. Kind of, I guess, the highlight or the low light, if you will, that game being Rask taking that huge hit in front of the net that actually ended up being a goal, but he suffers a concussion from the hit. So, you know, head injuries are always tough. They affect every player differently. It could be a quick turnaround if it's not that bad, or if, you know, there's lingering symptoms, we could see him be out for, you know, a couple weeks even.
Yeah, and just as the Bruins start to bring it all together, everyone's healthy, and then Rask goes down with a concussion, which an awful thing to happen, especially now knowing some of the effects that concussions can have moving forward and how dangerous they can be if not treated and just attended to properly. Obviously, there's never a good time to get a concussion, but he's going to have the week of rest anyways built in because of this week off, which is always good and very low pressure for recovery. And the other thing is, we've talked about him pretty much every week, is Halak being the other goalie and being very strong, which is good that we have someone as strong as Halak to fall back on in the goalie position. So we'll have that if Rask needs more time to recover, and if not, hopefully he'll have some time with this All-Star break, and depending on how much longer he's out for, we'll have Halak there to kind of fill his shoes while he's gone. So it's going to be putting a lot of pressure on Halak, but in my opinion, this is a time he can step up and really cement himself as maybe that number one goalie in the Bruins rotation.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned the All-Star break here in the NHL as well. David Pastrnak getting his first ever All-Star game appearance. We've mentioned that a couple of times, so looking forward to seeing him in that role. The Bruins will come back this next week, Tuesday the 29th versus the Winnipeg Jets. And then they have another game Thursday the 31st versus the Philadelphia Flyers. The Bruins dropping a couple here, sitting at 7th in the East, you know, tied with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Again, you know, things are very close, so this doesn't mean a whole lot. There is that potential to be, you know, in the second or third spot within a couple of games. So we'll just have to see, you know, we talked about the Celtics, how they need to have a big run coming off the All-Star break. So it'd be nice to see, you know, the Bruins kind of do something similar this week and, you know, come back with two strong games off the break.
Yeah, and I think with a lot of pieces kind of coming together at last and seeing finally this whole kind of team come together, give or take one or two injuries still, this is going to be the time where they need to band together and really just grind it out, get wins, and put themselves in the best possible position, because, I mean, they're halfway through the season and they really need to step it up. They've had a very unfortunate start to the season with their injuries and everything, but they toughed it out. They played really good hockey with all odds against them, with a lot of guys out, and now they got the team back, and they really just need to play the level of hockey they're capable of playing moving forward to really get up there in the standings, because we always talk about this. It's a matter of a few games, and if you win the right games and keep doing well, then you put yourself in a really good position moving forward.
Yeah, so I mean, hockey being a extremely rigorous sport, this week of rest is going to, you know, hopefully do them very well, and we'll look forward to some quick turnaround when they get back. But let's get into what is going to be a very long segment of the podcast in the New England Patriots. A huge, just phenomenal win over the Chiefs. We will break that down in excruciating detail for you. We actually talked about doing like a separate Patriots episode this week, and we both kind of agreed, you know, like, let's keep it in, you know, all one show, but, you know, maybe something, we might do some feature episodes going forward. You know, we're throwing around a couple ideas, but, you know, just a heads up to let you guys know what's going on here. Now, James, I know you've been wanting to talk about this since the final whistle on Sunday. First, kind of let's go over our thoughts of the Rams-Saints game. A very, I guess, interesting game, if you will. The Rams actually winning that on a field goal in overtime. But James, let's hear your thoughts on that game.
I definitely watched a lot of this game for sure, and it looked like, just like the Patriots did, it looked like the Saints had an opportunity to just run away with this game very, very quickly, and the Rams kind of fought to stay in it. And then in the second half, I mean, flip the script, the Rams came back and were coming out swinging. Saints kind of trying to keep up. And then ending with probably one of the most controversial missed calls that I've ever seen in my lifetime. Just a blatant...
probably in the history of sports.
Blatant pass interference call on the Saints' final drive. Missed call. Saints forced to kick a field goal. Rams tie it up and then win it in overtime, like you know. But people are crying out about just the injustice of this missed call. And I am with them on the level of, yes, this is obviously one of the worst missed calls in history. Just awful to see this happen, especially with how much the league has been cracking down on stuff like this, to see this get called for a penalty. And a lot of time we talk about, oh, maybe this shouldn't have been called. This is something where it should have been called and just wasn't. And a lot of people kind of looking for rule changes here to make sure things like this don't happen in the future. Players like Michael Thomas saying that they should reschedule the game or have the commissioner, Roger Goodell, actually overturn the outcome, which if you want to, we can talk about a little bit. I know we have a lot of stuff to go over with the Patriots games. So I don't want to drag this out too long, but the whole rescheduling thing, I think is kind of crazy that that's even possible to do. And I get that there's a level of human error and they're trying to kind of almost eliminate that from this game, but I don't like the idea of the commissioner being able to overturn a game no matter what the outcome is, unless it's like a last second play where there's something really obvious happening, maybe, but there's so much up in the air about what could have happened had this happened, or you know, if they had called the penalty, whatever. So if you want to kind of put in your thoughts about that game, then we can move forward with the Patriots stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really want to like speculate, because I mean, for the Saints to, you know, potentially, well, not potentially, the Saints miss a Super Bowl trip with a call like that. Again, we don't really know what else could have happened. It wasn't like the last play of the game or anything, very close, but still. And I mean, last year in Minnesota as well, so it must just be heartbreaking for Saints fans, and especially, you know, on a call that is, or a missed call rather, that is just so obvious. And I mean, I think the NFL even issued a statement like apologizing, like, yes, this should have been, you know, called. To your point about, you know, there is a rule in the NFL where the commissioner can overturn a game. James wasn't just saying that like, oh, like he should do that. No, there's an actual rule stated that they have that power. And I mean, you and I kind of talked about this briefly yesterday, and we both kind of agreed that, one, he shouldn't do it for this game, and two, the NFL commissioner kind of shouldn't do it ever, because then that just kind of leaves every game like, oh, like he has the power to overturn this, like any game he wants. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is there is going to be human error in sports. It's just the way it is. I mean, with the rise of technology and everything, we're slowly moving away from that. But as long as they have people on the field making the calls, there is going to be human error. It's just part of the game. I mean, I remember years ago in the MLB where there was a blatant wrong call on a you know, a grounder to first that cost a guy a perfect game. So, you know, they didn't go back on that call, even though it was very obvious. But, you know, the same sort of thing here. It's really tough because, you know, you're never going to make everyone happy. And like I said, there's always going to be that human error component. So just really unfortunate, but I mean, what's done is done. And I just, you know, wish the best for the Saints going into next year, I guess. And, you know, with their talent, they certainly can do it again, but you know, really just, it just kind of sucks, I guess, overall, for maybe not for the Rams, but kind of for this, especially for the Saints and kind of the league overall.
Yeah. And I think it's just one more thing that people are looking at, kind of calling for reform in the league about. There's been a lot of stuff this year with more penalties being called, more protection of the quarterback. And just one more thing that I don't want to say tarnishes the reputation of the league, but, you know, makes people look at it a little bit differently. And this is how I've almost always felt as a Boston sports fan, is people hate seeing Boston sports succeed, which is why I love being a fan of these teams so much, partially. But, I mean, the last couple Pats championships, I mean, there's been, oh, well, the refs helped them in this game, Deflategate, Spygate, blah, 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 blah. And I feel bad because if it comes down to it, everyone's going to say, oh, the Rams only made it because of this missed call. They're going to overlook all of the incredible work the Rams did this season. And obviously, I don't want to ride their side too much in this because I would prefer to stay kind of impartial to that whole situation. But I feel for them in the sense that this is all going to get pinned down to that one missed call no matter what happens moving forward. Either they only won the Super Bowl because the missed call, or they lost and they deserve to lose because of missed call. It's always going to be brought up for years and years and years, and I feel for them in that respect. But that's enough talking about the Rams, talking about teams that we don't care about too much, because the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl and an incredible win in the AFC Championship against the Chiefs.
Oh, what a game.
It was incredible.
What a game. I mean, you know, the Patriots getting the win in overtime, 37-31, in just a phenomenal game. I mean, AFC champions now, and Tom Brady going into his 9th Super Bowl, which is more than any other team in the NFL has ever been to. I think the runners-up are the Steelers and the Broncos with 8. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. I mean, that statistic is just absurd. And you kind of alluded to this with the Saints game, but, you know, the first half, just almost perfection by the Patriots. You know, they entered that half up 14-0. You know, it could have been more, and I think had it been more, this game would have been put to bed at halftime. I mean, you know, just kind of, you know, marching down the field, putting up a quick 14 points, and really just shutting the Chiefs down, not giving them any ground. I think they had negative yards in the second quarter. So, I mean, you know, the defense was there. Obviously, the offense and Tom Brady showed up.
Yeah, and basically the one thing that went wrong for the Patriots in the first half was that red zone interception on the 1 yard line, where for some reason they decided to throw on the 1 yard line. We know from experience that isn't a very good idea. It just happened to get picked off. So short of that, this was about as closely, I think, as you could script the first half. Just getting the ball, and this is something I'm going to be interested to see in the Super Bowl, is if the Patriots come into a position where they want to have the ball first, because they've done this for the past two games and they've used it to take massive chunks out of the clock in the first quarter, control the game, get down the field, put points on the board first, establish themselves, and an amazing first half. Like you said, the defense doing their job, shutting down Mahomes, finding a way to get to him. I think sacking him 4 times in total this entire game. The run game was strong. The pass game was great, converting on a lot of third downs, which is something I want to talk about a little bit, because the Patriots converted on, I believe, 13 total third downs, which is a massive issue they had earlier in the season. And to see them, you know, making these drives count, being able to get those plays and get those conversions when it matters to keep the drive rolling, a massive, massive part of this offense, and is going to be something especially important in the Super Bowl, being able to use all 3 of those downs, or maybe even all 4 of them if need be. And the Patriots really with an incredible first half. Flipping over, the Chiefs made great halftime adjustments. I cannot ignore that just from a football perspective. They shut down the run game. The Patriots were barely able to get anything going, and the Chiefs mounted the beginnings of their comeback. They rolled through the second half, outscoring the Patriots 31-17. We can't see that happen again. We need to see the Patriots keeping up with their halftime adjustments, which I feel like they had no answer in the third quarter. The fourth quarter obviously was back and forth and back and forth, and they kind of started to figure things out again. But the third quarter was just, the Patriots didn't play well. They had no answer for anything. They couldn't get a lot going. And what do you think about that kind of second half of the game and how that all went down?
I mean, like you said, the Chiefs definitely, you know, made the right calls in the second half. And, you know, apart from, you know, some different calls in this game, very close to, you know, going the Chiefs' way. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, how can you not believe in Tom Brady on a fourth quarter drive at the very end of the game? You know he's putting 7 points on the board. Just from past experience, you've got to know that the second the ball is, like, you see everyone going crazy in that stand, and you see like the announcers are like, oh my gosh, like what is going on? Tom Brady walks out on the field with 2 minutes left, cool as a cucumber, and you know he's going to go down the field and put 7 on the board.
Yeah, I think you always see these things if you follow a lot on social media, like down by 7, you know, 2 minutes left on the clock, blank timeouts, you know, who's your man? And I think I've never had a doubt in my mind for as long as I've followed this team that Tom Brady is the man for that job, and he's shown time and time again he's the guy in the fourth quarter who's able, he can get that winning drive when need be. And it's always comforting to, you know, have that guy at the helm leading the charge down the field. And in their last scoring drive of regulation, they went down the field in 63 seconds and put 7 points on the board. And
yeah, and I mean,
they left time, which I think was their one mistake.
That's what I was going to say. You know, they left and they went down too quick, essentially.
Yeah, they put the ball in the end zone too fast, which you'd never think is an issue. And I think this really speaks to Mahomes, is he didn't panic in his drive. He had 40 or so seconds on the board and a couple of just awful penalties on the Patriots. Awful in the sense that it's mistakes the defenders shouldn't be making, allowing Mahomes to get down the field. But as much as Brady, which scared me a lot, he was able to go out there like it was nothing. Like this was just first drive of the game, like nothing rode on this, even though it was their entire season, and tied the game right up.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to kind of give credit because I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but I definitely said it to you that I didn't think Mahomes would be able to go down and make that late fourth quarter drive if it came down to it. Now, granted, he did have some help by the Patriots defense with some penalties, like you said, that, you know, they probably shouldn't be making at this point in the year. But I mean, he did do it. They, you know, they tied the game up. He was able to send it to OT.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, this speaks to him as a player and scares me because of the level of talent. You see the year that this guy had and you're waiting, where's his weakness? And it almost seems like even through this game, despite winning, we couldn't find it. As a team, the Patriots truly, this man's still making his crazy sidearm throws, 50-yard just dimes down the field like it's nothing to him. And I know that moving forward, he's going to be a guy to watch if he can continue to play anything near the level he played at this season. And my candidate for MVP, really quickly, I want to throw that in there because of the incredible season he had, but scares me looking at just the level of play that guy's capable of. But moving into OT, once the Patriots won the toss, I instantly thought back.
The game is over.
To Super Bowl 51. That's the first thing that entered my mind. And I remember watching Super Bowl 51, sitting there, they won the coin toss, and I said, the Patriots are going down they're going down the field, they're going to put the ball in the end, so they're going to win the Super Bowl right now. And they did just that. And it was the same deal. This was the ideal Patriots drive. Getting down the field, they punched their ticket to Super Bowl 53. And my favorite thing about this entire drive is Rex Burkhead gets in the end zone on, I think, his second goal. They're all celebrating, and I think it was David Andrews runs through the pile, gets up, runs to the back of the end zone, and waves at the KC fans and just says, bye, see ya. That all he said, and just runs off the field.
Better luck next year.
One of the best moves I've ever seen by anyone. Better than any, you know, crazy team celebration they could have done. Just the Patriots doing it again. I'm getting worked up just thinking about this game happening. Just, I almost couldn't take it.
I think a roller coaster. We have to mention they didn't really, like, they did roll down the field, but you got to remember, they converted on, what, 3 or 4 third downs in OT? I mean, in long third downs, I think 3 of them were at least 3rd and 10 where they failed to, you know, move the ball on the first 2 downs. And we're talking like 3rd and 10 to Edelman, 3rd and 10 to Gronk, who really stepped up this game. And, you know, I kind of wanted to make an official announcement. I am back on the Rob Gronkowski train. The way he played in this game just reminded me of just, you know, the potential this man has. As much as I didn't like him, and that's going to seem really silly how I think just last week or 2 weeks ago, I was saying, you know, like, we need to get rid of this man. Like, he's just, you know, no, he stepped up, played a huge role. You know, 6 catches for 79 yards, and several of them being very clutch catches. Like I said, you know, the OT ones, and I think even a couple, or you know, one or two on that final drive in the fourth quarter. So I mean, just a roller coaster of emotions kind of thing. In the end, you know, we saw the Patriots team. It didn't matter. You know, they might have gone in as underdogs. They're not going into the Super Bowl as underdogs. This game kind of reminded everyone, oh yeah, it's the Patriots. They're going to show up and they're going to play.
Yeah, and I think really quickly stepping back to Rob Gronkowski, this was the Gronk we think of as the offensive weapon. And Gronk has, whether or not he's really been in this decision-making process, has taken a much more backseat role. We've seen him in a ton of blocking, which he's gotten very good at. Tackling, he's still very bad at. We know that for a fact. But blocking, he's had massive blocks, really opening up the run game for Sony Michel, a guy that we'd never think of in run blocking. He's out there to be an offensive weapon, which is what he was in this game. We saw a few times he got his one-on-one matchup, and this used to be the play. One-on-one matchup with Gronk. The ball's going to him. He's bigger and more athletic. He's going to make that catch, and that's what he did in this game. And I know everyone's probably seen the Tony Romo calling every single play of the Patriots game, but third down, one-on-one, he says, okay, this, you know, if the safety doesn't drop onto Gronkowski, this ball's going to him. It ran out exactly that way, but that was the play and really reuniting, in my opinion, too, some faith in Rob Gronkowski, regardless of what he does after the season, really stepped up and I think got back to the Rob Gronkowski that we all think of as just an insane offensive tool and weapon for this Patriots team.
Yeah, it's just a really reassuring game to see from the Patriots. I think we kind of knew it was going to be a close game, except maybe at halftime. Like I said, I was thinking like we are very close to this being a blowout. And I don't want to get into this too much because we're going to have basically a free week of football this week to speculate next week. But I mean, the Patriots are a few adjustments away, if they play kind of a similar game, to blowing the Los Angeles Rams out of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think obviously the Los Angeles Rams are another team where I wouldn't say as much are known for their offensive capabilities. They have the talents there in the run game, in the passing game. But where they shine is their defense. And you hear defense wins championships, and they've brought them to the Super Bowl. And I'm nervous to go up against, you know, guys like Aaron Donald, Ndamukong Suh, just this insane defense that they've built that's going to put pressure on Brady. But we got to see the Patriots O-line playing like they have and protecting Brady. And I know Brady posted something about his jersey and saying not even a single grass stain on it because of he didn't get sacked and barely got hit in the game against the Chiefs, which is something we need to see in the Super Bowl. And the other thing is the defense, and I said this about Mahomes too, no matter what it is, we need to find the thing that's going to shut down Jared Goff. Whatever's going to get under his skin, going to get in his head and get to him like we did Philip Rivers, and for most of the game found a way to do it to Patrick Mahomes. They need it, whether it's getting him hits on him, just putting pressure on him, they need to find a way to force him to make difficult plays and play his very best football. Because even in the Saints game, he was showing very human signs of, you know, throwing some bad interceptions and some bad passes. It's what it's going to take in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll kind of, like I said, leave the speculation till next week. And I mean, if you want more speculation, just turn on any sports news network for the next week and a half, because that's all you're going to get. You're going to get just random stats about the Patriots, the Rams, general Super Bowl stuff. That's just, they love to just hammer that stuff home. And there was a point last week before the Chiefs game where I was like, I can't watch it anymore. Like, I would have ESPN in the morning and I would have to shut it off because I was like, I don't want to hear about the age gap between, you know, Brady and Mahomes. I don't want to hear what, no, they're going to go out and they're going to play. And I think, you know, kind of going back to your thing about we need to find the thing that gets to Jared Goff, if there's one man that can do it, it is Bill Belichick. And I have no doubt in my mind that he will, you know, whether it plays out how we want it to or not, he will write up a near perfect game plan for the Rams.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are saying kind of like Bill Belichick as the defensive genius, Sean McVay as the offensive genius. It's going to be an incredible matchup regardless. What kind of I guess, leave most of the speculation at that for now. Like you said, we have a whole week, a whole media week of every stat about jersey colors, coin flips, grass, heat conditions, which team kicked off in which direction, and which end zone, time zones, literally the dumbest things known to man that at the end of the day, and I've said this more and more as the football season has occurred, I'm not going to try to predict things and say what's going to happen. Just they're going to go out and they're going to play a game of football, and that's what's going to happen, and we just got to hope the result goes in our favor, and we can speculate and point out things, but at the end of the day, it's going to be these two teams going out and playing a game of football on the biggest stage there is.
And I mean, if you really miss football that much, you can, you know, kind of get half your fill, if you will, with the Pro Bowl game, because it's not a real game. I don't even know who's going. I just know that obviously no one from the Patriots will be attending. If you care, it's this Sunday, the 27th at 3 p.m. Personally, you know, it's kind of like, you know, all the all-star games in every sport. It's kind of a joke where, you know, they're just kind of there to have fun sort of thing. So, I mean, that's on this weekend. I mean, any final thoughts really before we, you know, kind of get into, you know, when the Super Bowl is going to be, and then we can end it with our, you know, our hot takes.
Really quickly, I do want to give a massive shout out to the Jets getting their first tackle on a Patriot. Pat, the Patriot was actually has been at the Pro Bowl. The mascot for the Patriots seen there, and just out of nowhere, one of the Jets players just trashed the guy, just laid him out, and good job to the Jets for finally, like, hitting someone on the Patriots team. You did a good job at that, but you're going to the Pro Bowl, a game that means nothing to anyone ever. No one really cares about it as far as I know. And you tackle a man in a costume. This guy's just going out there to, you know, get some Patriots guys hyped up. And when I say Patriots guys, I mean Patriots fans, because obviously none of the players are actually going to the Pro Bowl. But he just tackles a poor kid wearing a costume, doing his job. Out of nowhere. And I felt really bad. And, like, I get that it's funny of him tackling the mascot, but, like, who in their right mind would do that?
Well, we know James's stance on the Pro Bowl now. He hates it, is what I'm going to go out to say. Anyway, the actual, you know, bowl game that matters, the Super Bowl, Sunday, February 3rd, 6:30 p.m. In Atlanta. And James, I kind of gathered here that your hot take had to do with the Super Bowl. Mine does as well, so you go first.
So my hot take of the week comes actually more to do with the Super Bowl performance, halftime performance.
Because, you know, year, why we all watch the Super Bowl.
Of course. I have never been a fan, once again, you hear me hating on the Pro Bowl, and now we're going to get into it. I have never been a fan of the halftime show because...
Does James actually like football? We
I don't know. During these games, I get so worked up that I just want to see the game play out. I just want to see what happens. I don't care about Katy Perry riding a metallic lion. I don't care about Justin Timberlake taking a selfie with a kid who doesn't know who Justin Timberlake is. I just want to see football. But I can say I'm a little bit excited this year because it's Maroon 5 performing, a group that I actually have... I enjoy a decent bit of their music, and Scott.
That's not why you're
excited. Travis Scott is also performing, so we're going to hear Sicko Mode about 25 times or so during the Super Bowl performance, because apparently Sicko Mode. But there was a one-minute teaser released on Twitter this week that has the world losing their mind, because after the passing of the creator of SpongeBob in 2018, everyone was saying, we got to see Sweet Victory during the halftime show. In about 31 seconds into this teaser, there's a half-second cut of SpongeBob's face. I'm calling it now. We are seeing Sweet Victory in the halftime show of Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. Thank you, and good night.
So my hot take, on the other hand, has to actually do with football. And I don't know if you can call this a hot take, because the Patriots have been known to do this. And, you know, with calling the, like, a flea flicker in the AFC Championship game being just a really big move, nothing came of it. It was a very close play. But But my hot take is we are going to see sort of extreme trick play here that no other coach would call in a Super Bowl. So, you know, whether, you know, the Patriots really haven't, I don't think, done like fake punts or fake field goals. That's not kind of their style. It's some sort of trickery on the offensive line. But, you know, I would be surprised if we didn't see some masterfully crafted play by, you know, Josh McDaniels and, you know, Bill Belichick gives him the nod to, you know, run that in the Super Bowl. Wouldn't be surprised. The Patriots have done it before, and I think they'll do it again. Any closing thoughts, James, before we shut the show down here? Again, a very, you know, heavy Patriots episode. There's good news and bad news to this. The good news, if you like the Patriots, you get to hear us talk a lot of Patriots. On the flip side, I guess not bad news, but if you don't like the Patriots or you don't like football that much, you only have to listen to us do this for, you know, 2 more weeks, and then, you know, it'll be over. So there's that. Thank you guys so much for listening. You know, please leave us a rating, subscribe to the podcast. We've done very well, you know, this past week and, you know, past couple weeks, actually. Thank you guys so much for the support in that regard. Please leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear, you know, leave a rating, a comment or anything, whatever platform you're listening to. We try to, you know, look around, see what people are saying. So that's always really great to hear. You can follow us on Twitter at Brady Bros Boston. That's, you know, where you can learn right away. That's the first thing I do when the podcast is uploaded is I tweet out about it. So if you want, you know, instant access kind of to when the new episodes are going up, and, you know, you like weekly reminders on different, you know, platforms and where we're launching, that's the easiest way. As well as I try to, you know, put some like general, you know, Boston sports news up in there, just like, you know, retweeting what the Bruins or the Patriots have said, that sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes, you know, personal thoughts on the games or whatever.
Yeah. And just to kind of reiterate what you said, if you guys, you know, if you're listening every week on a platform, but you're not like subscribed to us, please do that. Cause that way it will make sure that you see the episode every single week when we're uploading it. If you're not already following us on Twitter, that kind of using that as a way to keep up with us, be sure to subscribe, follow whatever it is on the platform you are using to make sure you're seeing our show every single week. And leave a rating because we'd love to hear back from you guys. But that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll see you all next week with more crazy speculation, Super Bowl stuff going on with every other team in Boston sports.
See ya!